Welcome to What's Ailing the World. On this show, you will learn how to recognize the patterns used by the psychopaths that are controlling our world, who have created the living hell we find ourselves in here on planet Earth, where doctors create disease and destroy life and administer biological weapons, nicknamed vaccines, which are corrupting our very genetic structure, where police and the judicial system protect the criminals and persecute the innocent, where governments have become terrorists against the people they purport to serve and commit treason every day by allowing the destruction of our air, water, food, and planet, who suppress the natural solutions to all these problems already available, who are stealing and torturing our children under the guise of child protection. The ability to see the big picture is a critical skill necessary to formulate the solutions we need to bring these predators down. The critical step for everyone with a conscience is to do your own research, as we have been lied to about everything. The study of language is very revealing. The word lie was put in the middle of the word belief, as when the psychopaths are able to lead the slave work units to believe a lie, it becomes their truth. I strongly recommend that you challenge all of your own beliefs until you know the truth. This is not easy, as I discovered when I had to face the fact that the medical profession I had so proudly joined was totally corrupted to do the opposite of the Hippocratic oath taken to first do no harm. I suggest that all of you go to my websites, drcarly.com and reversingvaccineinducediseases.com. On both of these websites, you can find my diagrams, the first diagram of which is the big picture of all disease. You can also listen to a lecture I gave in Chicago in 2008, which explains these diagrams. Let me also mention that there's a $10,000 reward posted on drcarly.com since 2006 for any white coat to refute any of my information. And, of course, to this day, I have received no takers. Thanks to the persecution I encountered due to my work, including the abduction and ongoing state-sanctioned torture of my son, I was forced to face the truth that all the problems we face are being caused intentionally, and the solutions that have been developed by people of conscience who step out of the boxes created when one becomes a licensed professional in any field are being suppressed. Facing the reality that the psychopaths which control our world have created a hell on earth intentionally is a step necessary in bringing forth an anti-hell. Silence is consent, and if you don't stand up and speak out, you are aiding and abetting those that are causing your own destruction. Speaking the truth and asking hard questions in great numbers is the road to anti-hell. Always remember that negotiation and compromise with evil is impossible. If you think my work is important, please tell others about the show. You can support this work by donating on the PayPal buttons on either of my sites. You can help friends or family who are too ill to face reality by getting a consult for them from me. To learn how I do consults, click on the Services tab on my ReversingVaccineInducedDiseases.com website. You can contact me by emailing me at drcarly@gmail.com or calling me at 828-294-0662 between 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time any day of the week. I also have a toll-free number which works from anywhere in the U.S., Canada, or the Caribbean. That number is 888-321-6751. However, strange things do happen with my phone, so if you get a message that the number has been disconnected or whatever, have the operator dial it for you. My Skype username is drcarly1, but I use Skype primarily for my international clients and radio shows. I do not practice medicine nor give medical advice. Rather, I teach people what I would do if I were you to reverse disease with natural therapies in people and in pets. Archives of my shows for the past few years on various networks can be found at thelightofdayradioshow.com. Click on Dr. Carly Archives. If you have questions or comments during the show, you can call in at 785-336-5190. Or if you want to Skype in, we have a new Skype number now for the show. It's PM Walk In Turtle. That's PM WALKINTURTLE. And we do ask for you to wait till the second hour if possible. Very important, callers need to mute their phones or Skype while waiting to be brought on so as not to cause interference with whoever speaking. one of the most important things you can do to protect yourself and your loved ones from the organisms being created by the mad scientists at the over 1,300 biowarfare labs in the U.S. alone is purchase a Silver Lungs colloidal silver generator. Go to the link section of reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com to learn how to obtain the silver generator I recommend and use personally for myself and all pets. And, oh, by the way, we now have 4 cases of quote-unquote flesh-eating disease around the Atlanta, Georgia area, home of the Centers for Disease Creation. So they're starting to chop off the limbs of these people, and I can assure you that this is an emerging bacteria coming out of the lab at the CDC. On today's show, the answer to the question, what's ailing the world, is ongoing denial of crimes against humanity. My special guest is going to be Kevin Annette, but before I want to bring him on, I just want to say, because tomorrow is quote-unquote Memorial Day, let's remember that every single person who died in any one of America's 40 wars since 1900, 22 wars of which have occurred just since 1990, did not give their lives to protect American freedom. They gave their lives to increase the profits of the Jewish international banksters. The people we should remember on Memorial Day are the innocent people killed by the Jewish American war machine, most recently militia leader J.T. Reddy, and also such whistleblowers as Thomas Manton, John Wheeler, Dick Simkinen, Matt Wellstone, and Bill Cooper, who were the real fighters for freedom, as well as the millions of innocent people killed because of deliberate lies by paid-off politicians. If you want to learn who the psychopaths that are controlling the world are, I strongly suggest you go online and watch the documentary, The Eternal Jew. Just type that into any search engine. It's very revealing to show you who's behind all of the torture and suffering in this world. And I also suggest that you go to SpingolaSpeaks.com and listen to a very important show that Deanna Spingola did with Zion Crime Factory a week ago today, as well as another show she did on February 18th, which you can find on the RBN archives, an interview with Bob Fletcher, who experienced the CIA operations used for black op purposes, and learn how you're spending your tax dollars for these very dark situations. Okay, my guest today, as I said, is Kevin Annette. His websites are www.kevinannette.com, www.itccs.org, which stands for International Tribunal on Crimes of Church and State, hiddennolonger.com, which includes his unbelievably excellent documentary film, Unrepentant, and hiddenfromhistory.org. And let me just mention, we have some good news in my local paper today in Charlotte, North Carolina. The Pope's butler has been arrested in a scandal. And why was he arrested? Because this Paolo Gabriel, a layman and member of the papal household, he actually rode around in the Pope with in his Pope mobile, was arrested Wednesday after secret documents were found in his Vatican City apartment. And also, I just wanted to mention that a week today is the Diamond Jubilee of the very evil Queen of England, who's celebrating 60 years on her throne. And thanks to my guest, Pastor Kevin Annette, I don't think she's going to be celebrating much longer. As a matter of fact, I suspect that she's going to be tried for crimes against humanity through Kevin's very important group, International Tribunal on Crimes of Church and State. So thank you so much for joining us. We were on a couple weeks ago, and we had so much interference. We're interfered with on a regular basis. So I'm just going to let you go, Kevin, and give our listeners any updates you have or anything you want to share in regards how your efforts to expose these monsters that have murdered thousands of Native children in these residential schools. How is that going?
Well, thanks, Dr. Carley. I appreciate coming on again. It's going incredibly well. I mean, every day we're getting feedback from all over the world, more people coming forward with evidence of these crimes, both past and present. Starting with the thing you mentioned about Paolo Gabriel in Rome, this is really outrageous. He's an Italian citizen who was arrested by Vatican police, held in a secret church prison, and he's going to be put on trial outside the laws of Italy, under the laws of the church. This is like the Middle Ages, where the Pope can have anyone arrested and tried and put in prison for the rest of their life just because they've displeased the Pope. So it's really not just a question of the crimes of the Vatican and the exposure of this Pope, but it's also a question of why does the church seem to have power over every government in the world to arrest anyone they want and never be held accountable under those laws. So it's a very, you know, it's a really serious matter. It's pretty clear why they had Paolo arrested in silence, because some of the papers he had indicated that the Pope had been taking bribes for a number of years to award Vatican contracts to friends and people who had contributed money to him. So it was a direct sign of the Pope being, you know, involved in taking money and handing out contracts to insiders. But also, it also showed that there was a power struggle whereby, the Pope who's in now used to be head of the Inquisition. It's called the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, and he would root out anybody in the Catholic Church who, you know, had a liberal or different kind of opinion than the dogma. And in that position, he made a lot of enemies, and those people are, the crows are coming home to roost now. And they are definitely trying to get rid of this Pope. There's a faction among the cardinals that are trying to use this, because the information leaks could not have come through this butler, Paolo Gabriele. He didn't have access to these documents showing the corruption and the bribes that the Pope had been taking. That had to come from the Secretary of State for the Vatican. So it's clear that there's some cardinals that are leaking this information. I think they're just using this Paolo guy as a scapegoat to draw attention away from themselves. But I think it shows you when insiders like that, including the head of the Vatican Bank, who was forced to step down last week, Gatti Tedeschi, he had been actually calling on the Vatican Bank to be more transparent in the way they were laundering money for the mafia and various other groups. So, when the head of the Vatican Bank and an inside member of his group start spilling the beans on the Pope, you know, things are really coming apart. And I think that that's all really a good sign.
Well, not only that, but he's going against a group of nuns. I don't remember exactly what their alleged crime is, but I know they were speaking out on matters the Pope did not think they had a right to speak out about. Can you remind us what that whole situation was about?
Yeah, there's a group around the world called Concerned Catholics, and they are a lobby group within the Catholic Church that want to see the policy change so that women can become ordained, just to kind of liberalize and loosen up the church and make it less of an old boys club. I mean, you know, good luck, right? the reality is some of these people are actually working with our network because they recognize they're trying to work within the church to bring out some of this evidence. But I'll give you an example of how they've helped. There is, when I was in Rome 2 years ago, there was a member who had worked in the Vatican Library who came to me with some evidence showing that the church had a record in the Vatican archives. Now, this is the subterranean vaults beneath the Vatican Library. And in those records, they have evidence of going back centuries of every person they've ever put on trial or caused to be killed. So this included records from the Indian boarding schools all over America and Canada.
Wow.
Confirming a lot of these medical experiments they were doing. They were trying out all sorts of like in the 20th century, a lot of the sterilization, the drug testing programs, all of that they were using in a big way. But they also, prior to that, looking for ways how to break people psychologically, various methods of torture. That's all documented and is in the Vatican archives. So I've actually seen evidence of this, and these were some of these people within the church providing that. So I think more of that is going to come out as more of these things break. It's encouraging people to come forward.
Well, that is fantastic. And, of course, the Catholic Church has, I believe, about 1 billion followers all over the world. And so I think this is critical in terms of getting them to stop bankrolling these monsters, which, as you said, you know, isn't it amazing how they claimed that they were immune from typical legal prosecution for all their pedophilia and other activities, that it should be able to be handled within the church. But then the church also goes against lay people, as you were saying with this butler, to prosecute them just for releasing evidence of their crimes. I don't see how anybody can back a church like this. It's so dark.
Well, it is. And, even regardless of your faith, there's a human rights question. Why should the head of this religious corporation have the right to order the arrest of an Italian citizen held incommunicado against the laws of Italy and basically strip him of all rights simply because he's displeased the Pope? There's nothing wrong with sharing, evidence that you found, especially when it pertains to criminal activity by somebody. And this man may face 30 years in a papal prison now. I mean, it's outrageous. And, in fact, the people in Italy should be demanding his immediate release and, in fact, the Pope be put on trial for signing letters ordering bishops, including in America, to cover up the rape of children in Catholic churches. So, I mean, these are crimes against humanity, as you mentioned in the introduction, and it's time people recognize that. In fact, in America right now, for the first time, two bishops, Catholic bishops, are on trial in Philadelphia and Kansas City for hiding child rapists and, protecting them within the Catholic Church. But both of them, what's interesting is both of them are now claiming that they were following orders of a cardinal in America who died quite suddenly when he was actually ordered to come to court and give testimony. He died the next day. But this cardinal was simply enacting the policy from the Vatican that when priests rape children, the parents and the child are silenced and the police are never told. That's a policy of obstructing justice coming right from Rome, right from the Pope's office. And yet these bishops now, for the first time, the Catholic hierarchy are facing trial in America. So that's, I believe, a step forward.
Well, yes, and I had written it down last time you were on. You had mentioned this policy, which is actually in writing. I think you told that you got a copy of this Criminum Solicitanus, where the, as you said, they're actually told rather than to, uncover or expose child rape by these priests, they're actually instructed to cover it up. They're just, quote-unquote, following orders. I mean, that's what they're doing. And is that the correct terminology that's used for this?
That's right, Crimen Solicitanus. It's a Latin term. It's actually, if you go to our book, all my research is online. It's hiddennolonger.com. If you go there and go into one of the appendices at the back of the book, we've reproduced the entire document. It was leaked to a London newspaper 4 years ago, and it clearly states this policy actually came in 1929. It was reaffirmed in 1962 and again by Ratzinger when he was a cardinal in the 1980s. And it orders priests and bishops to cover up the rape of children and make sure the police never find out about it. And if they don't do that, they're excommunicated. So in other words, they're saying the rape of a child is not a crime. It's simply a sin, which can be absolved, right? But what a crime is talking about it. And that's exactly why Paolo Gabriel is in prison now. He talked about these crimes, and that's the ultimate sin, ultimate crime in the Catholic law. So, the legal systems in any country have to go toe-to-toe with canon law and say, look, there can't be one law for the Catholics and one law for everybody else. I mean, that's just, not on.
Especially when their laws are allowing criminal activity to occur against children. And it's very fishy that, as you mentioned, that individual who was supposed to testify died, the day before he's supposed to testify. I mean, it sounds to me like they put a hit out on him so that they would not be, exposed by him. And also, I want to say, I think it's actually going to end up to bite them that they're putting this butler in a papal prison. I'm sure that's a real big wake-up call for people. What is a papal prison? Where are the papal prisons? How does that work, that they have their own prison system?
Well, it's a prison right within Vatican City. It's a very small area, It's only about 20 acres, and it's right in the middle of Rome. They've got their own jurisdiction. They're considered a nation, which is bogus because under international law, they don't qualify for nationhood. But the United Nations likes to let them call themselves a state. In reality, they're not. But that's where it's being held, right in Vatican City. Not sure exactly where. As to the first point about this cardinal who died, his name was Bevilacqua. He was a cardinal from the Bronx in New York, an old Italian mafia family, frankly. And he was fairly high in the Catholic hierarchy. Last year, a judge ordered him, he was 88 years old, and a judge said he was in fine health. The doctor ruled that he was fit to stand trial. The next morning, he's found dead. And, so go figure, right?
Yeah, sounds a little fishy to me. Well, I just wanted to go through some of the terms that you're demanding in your International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State, which, as I said, people can access by going to www.itccs.org, which is a coalition of survivors and their allies. And what they're asking for is full reparations for all survivors of church torture, full disclosure of the crimes, which it sounds to me like you're getting more and more information on from inside the church itself, from people of conscience, repatriation. In other words, the church must surrender for proper burial at its own expense the remains of all those who died in their institutions or under their care, which obviously they've cataloged in their crypt below the Vatican. Criminal prosecution for all those in the church, including the Pope, who have harmed or harmed children or aided and abetted their harm, to have them arrested and tried in secular courts of law and not be shielded from prosecution by any form of immunity, and also prevention that all clergy and church officials must be licensed as public servants and their actions monitored and controlled by the community, and that the clergy take a public pledge to swear to protect children in their parish and disclose harm done to them regardless of papal laws or decrees. And this is very important, that all legal tax exemptions and other benefits of the church be abolished and the diplomatic status of the Vatican annulled. The property and wealth of the church shall be nationalized if it persists in its role as a clear and present danger to children and a public enemy. So I think that's very important. The idea that these people that compromise this church, which has done nothing but harm from what it sounds like to me since their creation, all in the name of God, which is just so evil, there's no words, that they should actually be given tax exempt status for these crimes. It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, well, let me comment a little bit on that first. These 10 demands were actually issued a few weeks ago by our network in Ireland. They had a meeting with this guy, Archbishop Dermot Martin, and the cardinal in Ireland, Sean Brady, is about to step down because he himself was implicated in protecting child rapists. So that's the top Catholic official in Ireland is getting the boot, and so the church there is in real crisis. But the Irish survivors of these horrible institutions met with Archbishop Martin, and they said to him, look, you've got till September 15th, and after that, the Catholic Church is not going to have the right to operate in our country anymore. We're going to shut it down. They're planning occupations of churches. Some of the people have already gone into the main Catholic cathedral in Dublin and chained themselves to the altar during a mass and not moved, right? I mean, they're doing these direct actions against the church, and it's got a lot of publicity, a lot of people coming forward to help them, you know.
Excellent.
And we're part of this network around the world that are going to, beginning in September 15th, these direct actions if the church hasn't begun to respond to these measures that they need to do. Now, we're getting a real response to this, but part of the problem is that people have this psychological aversion to taking on the church as if it's something to do with God and morality, and when we see, in fact, it's quite the opposite. And one of the strengths they have is that they have secret financial agreements with governments all over the world. They're called financial concordats. Like a concordat is a treaty between the Vatican and nations. And these financial concordats actually siphon taxpayers' money directly to the Vatican Bank. In 2010 alone, Spain gave over a third of a billion euros to the Vatican Bank just out of taxpayers' money. Now, we know that there's similar agreements in America and Canada, but they can't legally be disclosed. So if people feel like writing a congressman saying, we want to know about this concordat where the Vatican's getting funded from American taxpayers' money to do these crimes. And so until we confront institutionally that, you know, that kind of arrangement, you can't really get to the heart of this problem until you look at what's funding it, what's maintaining it. So that's part of what we've got to do as well.
And what is the rationale for the church getting money from governments? I mean, why would any government sign such an agreement? That is insane in itself.
Well, you know, it's a long history. The governments, kings and then governments after them, got sanctioned to operate from the Pope I mean, they've had that relationship. The American government, of course, has been tied closely to the Vatican ever since World War II, when the Vatican helped to smuggle a lot of Nazi scientists out of Europe through what they call the Vatican rat lines, to South America, to Canada and the United States to work on things like the MKUltra research, the, you know, the mind control experiments that the Nazis had pioneered. They, the CIA has had a close tie with the Vatican ever since the 1980s, when they began to use their connections in Eastern Europe to help the CIA. You know, so there's been that thing. Also the fact, you know, American politicians, I'm sure, will think, well, there are a lot of Catholic voters out there. We don't want to, offend them. It's that whole kind of history that we're dealing with. And yet, at the same time, there's a lot of people in the Catholic Church that are saying enough is enough. We don't even want to be part of this corruption and murderous legacy anymore. So that's one of the reasons that, you know, the Pope is on the defensive right now, because he's getting so much of this opposition, even from within the Church.
Well, not only that, but let me just say there's a lot of disinformation about the whole Nazi thing as well. I mean, it's actually the Zionist Jews who are behind most of that, and I'm just learning about that history now myself. But what you're talking about reminds me, I forget the term, but they used to have some policy within the Church. I did a short stint as a Catholic myself until I woke up to the corruption and fraud. And they had a term for you could give money and you would be forgiven. I don't know if you're aware of that term. Apparently they got rid of that because that was a little too obvious. You know, now they just tell you how many Hail Marys to do or whatever the case may be. But I was just thinking this might be some attempt by the politicians also, who are committing very similar crimes themselves as far as the global pedophile network goes and things of that nature, that, you know, if they give money, then they can buy their way out of their sins.
Well, yeah, it's called an indulgence. And it was brought in as far back as over 1,000 years ago. In relation to the Crusades, where, you know, the Christian knights were absolved from any murder or rape they might do if it was done in the name of the Pope. But the indulgence is actually still in place. I remember when I was in Rome, somebody told me they'd just been into the Vatican Museum, and there was a big sign up, and it said that you could get a papal blessing for 90 euros. So, you know, you pay 150 bucks and you get a special blessing from the Pope, as if that means anything, right? The whole idea that you can buy your way into heaven, that you can buy, you know, spiritual blessings the way you do a VCR or something, I mean, that's still very much at the heart of Catholic theology. And these things never get done away with, they just get renamed.
Exactly. Exactly. And it just boggles my mind. They have this EWTN network. Occasionally I scroll onto that on my television to see what they're up to. And you see these churches and all of their golden chalices and all their pageantry. It's very much like the royals do. And then you think of all the Catholic people who are destitute, who are homeless. I had a very good friend years ago who was a very staunch Catholic, and she had cancer, and she had decided she did not want to go the chemo radiation route, and she went to her church to ask them if they could please help her, because of course nothing that works is funded by insurance. She would have to pay for that out of pocket, and they told her no, they do not support any quote-unquote non-traditional medicine. So they won't do anything to help the people that are donating, you know, tithing, the people that do that, give 10% of their income to the church. The ones who really need help, there's no help for them. Apparently, they're just spending their money on their pageantry and their large homes. I mean, some of the homes of these bishops where they live and the fancy cars they drive, it's really amazing when you actually check into these things. And of course, you know, getting themselves out of hot water. I can remember when this scandal really started happening, the Pope had actually suggested a legal defense fund that people donate in addition to their regular tithing to the church, that they help the church by donating to a fund to help them get out of jail free for the crimes that they've committed against the children.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so sickening. And You know, even when they have lawsuits brought against them, like in the United States, I work with a group called the Tamaki Law Firm that has brought the only successful lawsuit against the Jesuits for the Indian boarding schools in South Dakota. These schools, I mean, it's the same kind of crimes that went on in Canada. You know, we've had stories. I had an eyewitness come with me to Rome, Clarita Vargas, and she saw a Jesuit priest bury a newborn baby alive under the floorboards of a church in Omak, Washington, 1971. This was a young baby that had been born after a girl, Native girl, had been raped by a priest. Then they kill this baby. She's an eyewitness to this thing. The FBI refused to investigate. They said you'd need the permission of the Catholic Church before they dug under those floorboards. I mean, you know, you go to the serial killer and ask for permission to check in their house, you know. This is how ludicrous the whole thing is. But they finally sued the Jesuits for some of these crimes, but none of the money was paid out of the Jesuit order. The compensation money was about $160 million went to some of these survivors. It came from their insurance brokers in New York. You know, they just cover the cost, and none of the property, the wealth, or the incomes of the Jesuits were touched. And this shows you what happens. They just move in, and not only that, the South Dakota legislature passed a special law prohibiting the church as a whole to be sued. Only individual priests could be sued. You know, these Catholic senators in South Dakota just made sure that their church was protected. So this is the kind of game you get. The government stepping in to automatically protect the assets of the church. So that's the kind of thing that's got to stop. Otherwise, how are you ever going to get justice?
Which is ridiculous because, as you said, through their criminis solicitanus, the mm-hmm. church has a policy of covering this up. So how can they possibly say the church can't be sued when the church is actually sponsoring all of this?
Well, exactly. That's the point. Any lawyer would say, no, this is what's called vicarious liability. That's already been established in Canadian courts, that vicarious liability means the employer is responsible for everything done by their workers. And in this case, if the church is vicariously liable, then their top officer, including the Pope or the Queen of England in the case of the Anglican Church, these people are responsible legally for everything that's gone on. So why aren't the Pope and the Queen standing trial? I mean, under international law, they have to.
Okay, and you bring up a very important point. I want you to discuss the difference between the Anglican versus the Catholic Church. But if you could first, you had mentioned ongoing crimes. Please share with the listeners what's going on at this time. Do they still have residential schools? Are they still committing these atrocities, even though you're uncovering it as we speak?
There are the equivalent of the residential schools today. There's a lot of white foster homes where a lot of Native kids are still taken from their families and incarcerated. The Catholic Church runs a lot of adoption agencies and orphanages where Native kids and other children are taken. As a matter of fact, often they force the young mother, while still pregnant, to sign away their baby to the church. The baby is then basically trafficked through the adoption agencies, and lots of monies are made through them. So the churches are still very involved in this child trafficking network. Not just the outright sex trafficking, but also baby trafficking all over the world, and making a lot of money through these things. So yeah, the same kinds of crimes are going on. We're also documenting the child pornography and trafficking network that spans the world, really. There's a direct link on the West Coast here, that, you know, between child trafficking and what goes on in Thailand. There's sex tours that have involved a number of the churches themselves, believe it or not, have been implicated in being involved in these things. So yeah, these are ongoing crimes. The problem is that with something present day, it's hard to get people to come forward because they know how dangerous it is. We've had several Native people in our network in Vancouver actually killed in the last 2 years because they came forward and named a number of these things. And you know, including the eyewitness to the abduction of 10 children by the Queen of England in 1964 from a Catholic residential school. A man who witnessed Elizabeth and Philip taking 10 children from the school and these children were never seen again. William Coombs witnessed that, and he died very quickly in a hospital just before he was to come and testify about that. So, you know, these things are happening today, and it implicates these powerful so-called heads of state.
And for what reason were Elizabeth and Philip allowed to take 10 children? I mean, I'm sure I know what the reason they did it was, but you know, how does the queen go into a school and say, we'd like 10 children, and she probably handpicked them, which one she wanted. And for what reason was it alleged that she needed these 10 children?
Well, we don't know exactly the reason she gave. I don't think she needs to give a reason. As so-called head of state in Canada, she can do whatever she wants. I mean, we saw the Pope can have a guy arrested and put in prison. The Queen can do the same thing. And, in fact, you know, what William said specifically is she actually got all the children lined up. This was the Kamloops Roman Catholic Residential School in British Columbia. October 1964, the records of the Government of Canada indicate that, yes, she and Philip were on a state visit that month in Canada. And William says she made all the children line up and kiss her boot. And then she took 7 boys and 3 girls off with her, and they disappeared. You know, so the point is these people don't have to justify anything. This, you know, I'm sure, happens all the time. There just happened to be a witness on that one occasion who's talked about it.
So what is the connection between the Anglican and the Catholic Church? How is the Queen connected to the Pope?
Well, the Crown of England is a direct, if you like, a subsidiary of the Vatican. In the year, just before Magna Carta, in the year 1213, King John in England was made the legal vassal of the Pope in return for basically having the Pope help him pay off his debts. King John signed away the Crown of England and made all of England the legal vassal of Rome. That was never annulled by any subsequent law. So in effect, the Crown of England is a wing of the Vatican. I know that for a fact because here's a little piece of evidence of that. When I was ordained in the United Church of Canada, and that's the largest Protestant church in Canada, it has nothing to do, it's not supposed to have anything to do with the Roman Catholic Church. In my ordination certificate, it said I was being ordained into the United Church, part of the Catholic, Universal Catholic Church. Now, I asked people, well, why? What does this mean we're part of the Catholic Church? I thought we weren't. And they just gave some lame excuse that, oh, that just means universal. But in fact, no. The United Church of Canada was set up by the Crown of England through an act of the Canadian Parliament in 1925. The Parliament is under the Crown, which is under Rome. And that's the proof in writing that we, you know, they are considered part, you know, legal subsidiary of the Vatican. So I think, you know, that explains a lot. I mean, a lot of these things that were set up were done jointly through the Crown of England and Rome. And the city of London, as with the Vatican, it's an area outside all legal jurisdiction. It's about a 1 mile square area downtown. It's where the Bank of England is. The city of London, the Queen needs permission to enter it. She can't just walk in there. It's a separate legal jurisdiction, just as the Vatican is. And so that's because it's a wing of the Vatican. It's an area that no law can operate under except the law of the Church. So, you know, this is all proof of what we're talking about. We're really talking about the same corporation.
And you just said that the Church is under, or the Parliament is under the Crown. I would like you to give more information about that, because of course, what we're all told is pretty much that the royal family, they're just figureheads now. They don't really have any power. But that's not true, is it?
No. In fact, to give you an example, when you look, you can just do a Google search and look this up under the Oath of Allegiance taken by any member of Parliament in Canada. It says, I swear to true allegiance, and that's a Latin word meaning to be a legal slave of somebody, allegiance. I swear true allegiance to Elizabeth II of England and all her descendants. That's all it says. It doesn't say they swear allegiance to the Constitution or the people of Canada. So every member of Parliament, like every judge, every lawyer, every cop, is a legal vassal of the Crown of England. They're a servant of a foreign power. They're not a servant of the people of Canada. And she herself is a legal vassal of the Pope. So that's one of the reasons the Church of England or the Catholic Church have never been put on trial for the death of 50,000 children in these residential schools, because they're not allowed to be. They cannot face their, you know, what they call a sovereign entity has no accountability. They're not liable to any law. And, you know, this is why it's a puppet government in Canada. People are elect people, you know, representatives who are not representative. They're a servant of a foreign power. And this is something that people find hard to believe, but when you read it, that, you know, simple oath, then that's the proof of what we're talking about.
And so, therefore, when they have their meetings where they're creating their laws and other things they're doing, actually they're just puppets for these powers, and they're just doing what they're told to do to make it appear as though Canada has a government, which is, you know, unto itself.
Well, yeah, and to give you an example, about over three-quarters of the laws passed in Canada are never even debated in Parliament. It's kind of like what happened to the Homeland Security thing. It's just kind of rushed through. Most laws are done through what they call order in council, which is the Privy Council. It's a group of bureaucrats appointed through the City of London. Now, the Crown of England is not just simply the Queen as a person. It actually means the City of London banking cartel. That's what the Crown is. It's a corporation, again, a subsidiary of Rome, but again, a corporate entity. And that's the one that the Privy Council passes these laws. And so, you know, we've tried to get members of Parliament to raise this issue of genocide. It's never brought before the House because it's not allowed to be. And, you know, this is just the arrangement, how a colonial system operates.
I'm just curious, I'm sure they don't admit to that. They just come up with some other excuse, or their non-response is speaking volumes, right?
Yeah, they just don't answer. And in fact, you know, even when we go and speak, I remember I went into Parliament about 4 years ago, and I asked a number of members of Parliament, when is there going to be a motion brought forward to have these churches investigated for the death of these children? It's been proven over half these children never came back from residential school. And each one of them said the same thing. We're not allowed to raise that. We're not allowed to accuse the Crown of a crime. Well, then how are you going to work through the system to get justice? You can't. You've got to find some other way, which is why we're going to try to set up international courts to indict these, you know, so-called heads of state and church.
And I know that you've been proceeding with excavations of the bodies of these children. How is that going?
Well, we actually were invited in last year to Mohawk Territory in southern Ontario. So these were Native people who actually were from what's now New York originally, but they were driven up after the American Revolution into Canada. The oldest Indian boarding school in Brantford, Ontario, was called the Mohawk School, set up by the Church of England. We were invited by Mohawk elders to come and start digging and surveying the grounds there last year, and we started doing that. We recovered a number of bones and bits of children's clothing and buttons, which were identified as coming from the school uniforms. We had the bones identified. They were positively identified as being human, coming from young boys and girls. We've had this forensic report filed with human rights groups in Geneva and other places in the world. And we're ready to report. We're putting together a complete report on this that we're going to be using, hopefully, to bring a charge in the International Criminal Court against Canada, the Church of England, the Church of Rome for these crimes. So because of that dig we started in Brantford, three other places in Canada now, the Native people have gone ahead and said, okay, we're going to start looking for our relatives as well and bring them home for proper burial. That started in a number of places, so we're hoping that'll spread. And that's happening in the face of a government and church whitewash called the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which is holding these hearings across the country, but people aren't allowed to name names. They're not allowed to accuse the church of anything. We're doing this direct investigation to counter this government cover-up. And so far, we've had a lot more people coming forward. You know, it's like whenever you start naming these things publicly, you get a response. And that's going ahead. So we hope to start doing the same thing in America in the coming year, because we've had some interest from Native groups there as well.
Well, definitely. And this whole idea of truth and reconciliation, basically, that smells of a massive cover-up. How can you have truth if you're not allowed to name names? And basically, obviously, their idea of reconciliation is, oh, let us just say we're sorry without even naming who the perpetrators are and just move forward.
Yeah, I know. It's really pathetic. You know, I actually went to one of these TRC, they're called TRC hearings, just on Vancouver Island here. And they chose the Native people who were to speak. They got to look through their statements first. It was totally controlled and censored. White people could get up at the microphone and speak for as long as they wanted. But if you were a survivor of a residential school, you got 5 to 10 minutes maximum. The people were treated with total disrespect. You know, it's designed to re-traumatize people, really, and to let Native people know that you can't get justice in the system, so don't even try. And, you know, the church, if you can believe it, these bishops, Catholic and Anglican bishops, showed up and got up at the mic and said, well, we felt we were doing the right thing. You know, we felt we were helping these poor children. And to their credit, some of the Native people started yelling at them, you know, those are lies, tell the truth. But the reality is they got to get away with this, and this is what the Canadian media reports, you know, that the churches are all doing the right thing now, that, you know, the kind of BS you get out of Rome, where the Pope says that they're looking into these crimes. You know, it's the same old kind of whitewash, and nothing's really changing for people on the ground. So this is what we're trying to counter, and it really depends on people themselves coming forward to, who have the evidence to come forward to counter these lies.
Well, not only that, the people, you know, the white people should be outraged at what's going on. For these people, these Catholic bishops to stand up and say, we thought we were doing the right thing by stealing children out of their homes, out of their heritage, and killing and raping them, that you thought that was the right thing? I mean, that's beyond comprehension. I don't understand why the people of the country are not standing up. How can they allow that? And I kind of know the answer, because they just figure, oh, I'm glad it wasn't us. But, you know, well, it is us now. This is happening to people of all nations, this child abduction under right. the guise of child protection and all of the other things they're doing. It's happening to everybody. So obviously all people of conscience should be outraged by this behavior.
Absolutely, Dr. Curley. And you know, when we put the evidence to people, like whenever we'll protest at these churches and that, a lot of the people coming by in the street are in sympathy and say, yeah, that should stop. But then again, they're not going to take the next step most of the time to confront these churches. They're afraid of them. And there's also a lot of racism in Canada towards Indians. I mean, people really don't care what happens to Aboriginal people, you know, and we see that there's over 500 missing Aboriginal women right here on the West Coast, and nobody cares about it. I mean, people go missing all the time. Native people are beaten to death in prison all the time by cops, and there's never an investigation done. So, I mean, it's that kind of climate that allows these crimes to flourish.
Amazing. Okay, I'm getting a message that we have a caller on the line. Are you there, caller? Are you there, caller? Okay, we can't hear her. Okay, getting a message. Give a second. Okay, apparently there's some difficulty in connection. Okay, so bring on the caller whenever you can bring on the caller. What is your status right now in terms of your investigation? I'm sure you're continuing with the digs. What can people do to help you in any way that they can?
Well, hello.
Okay, wait. Sorry, I had hold to on, my we radio got our off. Caller.
Okay, I'll answer that
okay,
in a bit.
Go ahead, caller.
How's it going today?
Good.
I am one of the hosts on the other radio shows here. My name's Ravana, and I wanted to ask to get justice, you're going through the international courts. Have you spoken with anyone from the United Nations of Turtle Island to try to get them to lodge a complaint or try to make the case?
Yes, actually, we've worked since 1998. We've worked with indigenous groups, including some of them have NGO status at the UN. This is one of the ways that this information has gotten through. I should clarify that we're not only seeking a remedy at the International Criminal Court, which is kind of a long shot for different reasons. We're also encouraging indigenous groups to set up their own traditional tribal courts to try these crimes. So, for example, the Mohawks in the Six Nations area in the east, the Squamish people on the west coast of Canada, they're all in the process of setting up their traditional longhouse courts. And so they intend to issue summonses to these people responsible and conduct their own courts and sentencing on their territory. The Squamish chief Capilano, the traditional chief, has already ordered the Catholic and Protestant churches off his territory. He said, you know, churches that cause these crimes against our children should not have the right to operate on our land. They'll be gone. And these are the kinds of, you know, orders that are coming out of their own traditional courts. So we're hoping a number of different routes. We're not just looking through one channel.
Well, and just to clarify, I just want to say, although your ITCCS has international in its name, International Tribunal on Crimes of Church and State, it's not officially connected to the International Criminal Court, is it?
No, not at all. We don't accept money or anything or any affiliation from any government or church-affiliated group. We're an independent grassroots movement, and we're looking to those in the native world and in the non-native world to kind of who have the means, who have the judicial knowledge and connections to come forward and help us. So it's more at that stage at this point.
Well, not only that, but I had started investigating the International Criminal Court when it first started, because after my 7 years in courts up to the United States Supreme Court, learning about the corruption and fraud and having my case against a judge thrown out because he's immune even if corrupt, malicious, or incompetent, I learned that the first thing the International Criminal Court did was give immunity to their judges as well. So as far as I'm concerned, the International Criminal Court is founded on the same principles as the corrupt courts in this country. So I can't imagine that they would be involved in any meaningful way.
Well, and also don't forget, too, that the International Criminal Court has tied its hands in many cases. You're not allowed to bring an accusation of genocide against a country that isn't a signatory. The United States is not a signatory, for example. And that country, even if it is a signatory, has to agree to be investigated. That's kind of inconceivable to think, well, okay, the Vatican has agreed to, that we come in and look at their archives. I mean, that's not going to happen. So it's almost a figurehead concept, you know, this ICC. In practice, even though people are using it, there's a group in New York, the Center for Constitutional Rights, that's trying to sue the Pope on behalf of survivors in America of rape by priests. They've been blocked for over 2 years now at the ICC from trying to go ahead. So, I mean, it's, I know what you're saying.
Right. I mean, the idea that a country or an individual or an organization or a corporation would have to give permission for themselves to be investigated, it's a fraud on its face just because of that. Okay, we're getting another question typed in, but let me just ask if Ravana has any other questions or comments.
I was going to mention, the natives, the native tribes, they know the truth of what's happened. Mm-hmm. Why not just simply get a group of the tribes together, of the elders together, and basically have them, make their own court and make their own judgment, and then just place it on the record. Don't say, look, we're placing charges. We already tried these people. This is our judgment. We're submitting it to you. Here you go. This is our opinion. This is our judgment. It's a done deal. Now it's your turn to deal with it. You can either deal with it or you can let us deal with it. That would be my opinion.
Well, quite right. And in fact, there have been numerous attempts to do that. And the thing to understand, the difficulty and I'm not as familiar in America, but in Canada, in the native world, there's different authorities within the different nations. There's traditional, like the clan mothers on the West Coast, traditional tribal authorities versus the government-funded elected band councils. And the native communities wanted unanimity. They wanted unity among all of those factions before they came out publicly. Well, it's really hard to bring that about. When we were digging at Brantford, some of the tribal chiefs were against what we were doing. Some were in favor. We had the backing of the traditional clan mothers, the clans there. And so part of that difficulty is Native people often don't want to have that disunity showed. They want a common front. And that's been very difficult. The government's been backing some chiefs to oppose what we're doing. It's real divide and conquer tactics, as you know. So that's been one of the difficulties. But on the other hand, there have been more Native elders coming forward calling for that. So I think, you're right. That's the direction, ultimately, that's what's needed.
Well, and I have to say, as soon as they started allowing casinos to be built on reservations, I knew that was going to be a big problem, because obviously there's elders within the Indian community who have pretty much sold out their people anyways, because that's why they're allowing casinos on, bringing gambling and alcohol and all these things onto the reservations, which are a very big problem in terms of erasing their heritage and their traditions and things of that nature. So I'm sure that that's another thing they do, is look for those who will, you know, sell their soul for cash and sell out their own people. And what needs to happen is for the Indians within the tribes, you know, to basically get rid of those elders who have sold their people out, because obviously, you know, they're not interested in the Indians getting justice, which there's nothing more important than that.
Well, let me add, too, that we actually have an advisory council of Native elders, traditionalists, who work with the ITCCS. And some of these people don't want to come forward publicly. Others have, like Peter Yellowquill from the Ojibwe or Anishinaabe people in central Canada. He was just on our radio show yesterday talking about this. So if you want to write to me, I can certainly provide you kind of more information about that. My email is hiddenfromhistory1, like the number one, hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com. And I'd be happy to put you and others in touch with those Native people.
And please give out the information about your show. You're on Blog Talk Radio, right?
Yeah, every second Saturday. So 2 weeks from yesterday, again, it's June 9th is our next show, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, blogtalkradio.com/hiddenfromhistory. And we have a lot of the people involved in these different efforts on, you know, just to talk about the ongoing work and that. So, yeah, please tune in.
Anything else, Ravana?
Nothing right this second. Just like to say thank you for bringing the truth out and for helping the Native peoples to try and get some justice. I mean, just
thank you.
What you're doing.
Okay.
Well, not only that, but I want to say that what Kevin is doing is very important in terms of what's happening to all humans on the planet. Because, as I said, it's not just the Native peoples. They're doing this to everybody now. And as a matter of fact, there's something in the works where we're going to do a similar thing in regards to many different crimes against humanity being, you know, committed by the psychopaths that control the world. So this is going to have, you know, an ongoing effect, because once people see the Native people coming together to demand justice, this may hopefully give the others who are experiencing all kinds of crimes, genocide, you know, the whole financial situation as people are losing their homes, everything they're doing, destroying the planet, the air, the water, the food, everything is being done on purpose, and it has to stop. It's all being committed by the same psychopaths, as I said. And we're getting a question here asking, have you sought out the First Nations in the U.S.? Has any investigation been done for the murders and abuse of Native children in the United States?
Yes, for a number of years, there's been a group working in the Midwest that have actually documented grave sites at former Jesuit boarding schools. They've kept this information under wraps because they've known in the past what's happened when people come forward prematurely with this stuff. And so what they've done is they've cataloged a number of these schools. They're putting that together, and they're actually working with us to have this in a final report, which we hope to get published internationally over the coming year. There's also groups in the light of that lawsuit I mentioned that the Tamaki Law Firm brought against the Jesuits. They're now starting litigation against the Catholic Church. Now, in America, it was primarily Bureau of Indian Affairs. The churches didn't have the kind of power that they had up in Canada. But there were a lot of churches still involved in these mission schools, like the Carlisle School in Pennsylvania, set up by the Methodists. There's been an attempt by to have these churches come forward to give you, you know, some of the missionaries of the Methodist missionaries, like John Chivington, who used to lead raids against Indian villages and personally slaughter Indian children and women. They've been trying to get the Methodists to come forward and acknowledge these crimes. That's the kind of work the Native groups have been trying in America. But as you can imagine, there's a real stonewalling that's happened. The main target, of course, in America is the Catholic Church. They were the Jesuits were the ones who set up these Indian schools. So I guess the short answer is yes, that's in the works, but, the situation's a bit different in America. There hasn't been the systematic work like primarily in Western Canada, where to bring out this stuff. For almost 20 years now, we've been working on this, In America, it's just started recently. So there's a bit of a discrepancy, but we're hoping that people will use this information to encourage that, you know, the people in America start coming forward now with this stuff.
Exactly. And actually, I have some information in regards to the Mormons and a massacre that occurred in 1857, the tragedy at Mountain Meadows. So apparently, you know, this is something they blamed the Paiute Indians and, went after them. So apparently, you know, this is a pattern and practice of the churches that they go after the natives. And, of course, the very starting of, you know, this country was involving stealing from and massacring Indians. So do you have any information about the Mormon involvement in this?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it wasn't just natives, of course. The Mormons tended to target. There's that famous incident, infamous thing where they massacred an entire wagon train of white settlers who weren't Mormons. But the Mormons considered themselves their own state in Utah, of course, and they had a running battle with the U.S. cavalry for years over whose land it was, really. But part of the early, when the Mormons first arrived in what's now Utah, they targeted the Ute Indians for extermination. There's letters being written about that. They went out on hunting parties and wiped out every local native they could find, massacred all of them. The Mormon bishops encouraged their people to do that, you know, using religious zeal as the justification that they were the chosen people and they had the right to that land, you know, invoking stuff out of the Old Testament all the time. So that's been documented. The Mormons have never come forward and acknowledged where, for example, these people are buried, the evidence of the crimes or even discussed reparations or anything. So, you know, again, it's part of that hidden history. People have to bring forward the truth first and then confront these institutions directly. Otherwise, you're not, you know, this stuff's never going to come out.
Yeah, especially because in that instance, apparently Brigham Young was involved. And, of course, you know, Brigham Young has been made, you know, a hero in history. And, you know, as always happens, when you start digging, you find out what these people are actually involved in.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, what you're taught in the history of textbooks doesn't correspond often with reality, especially when you're talking about genocide and you know, what North America was built on, both in Canada and the U.S., was, you know, the first stage of outright extermination. And then you take the remnant native population and you put them in concentration camps under special laws, you know, called the Indian Act, which is still in place in Canada. Natives aren't even citizens under the law in Canada. In America, it's different. The natives were allowed full citizenship rights in 1924 if they gave up their status as an Indian. But native nations in America are now considered dependencies. They're recognized not as sovereign nations, but as dependent nations on the American government. So, you know, the people are trying to change that too. But in Canada, it's even worse. They're out and out serfs. I mean, you're not a citizen. You don't even have the right to fair trial under the Indian Act. You can be incarcerated in a hospital against your will or expelled from your home on a reservation just with the decision of one man in Ottawa, the Minister of Indian Affairs. So, I mean, it's a completely colonial situation in Canada. And I think in that sense, American Indians have a bit more of an advantage in terms of at least being able to see themselves as full citizens.
If citizenship is looked upon as a benefit, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, and I did not know about this dependency situation, which I totally understand because I had been trying for years to find some Indian group who would be willing to build a healing clinic on their reservation and therefore, you know, allowing it to happen because here in the States, of course, especially if anybody finds a way to cure cancer, they're basically run out of the country. That's why I have to use the words reversing the cause instead of the cure word. But in fact, apparently they're not sovereign and that's why they can't do that.
Right. You know, it's kind of like ultimately all the resources, all the land reside in the U.S. government. Just like in Canada, they say it resides in the so-called crown. You know, even people who own their own homes in Canada, you actually only own the first 6 inches of soil, which traditionally was the depth of a plow. Under that, all the resources are owned by the crown, and similar in America. So No, that's the thing. You know, working, and I've worked a lot with Native groups. I'm often invited to come and speak in Native communities and universities and that. And the first thing people say to me is, well, you know, we haven't been able to be too public about you coming. We'd get a lot of flack, but here, you know, we want you to come anyway. There's that whole fear-based mentality where they're always looking over their shoulder at Big Brother. And that's part of the problem. The younger Native generations aren't as traumatized that way. Those are the ones who often stand up and work with me, you know, but definitely the older generations have learned to be slaves, and it's hard to break that mentality.
And definitely that mentality has to be broken, as I say on my show all the time. We're all basically in the same situation now. You know, the goal under Agenda 21 is to depopulate the Earth by 90%. So basically, we're already dead. We must do something to stop these psychopaths at the highest levels. And fear is one of the most the strongest weapons they have, because if they can scare you into doing nothing, then they don't even have to take their mask off to such an extent and make it more obvious to others what's really happening.
Yeah, that's true. And as a matter of fact, when you mentioned Agenda 21, there's a policy in Canada, and it's called Agenda 21, and the Native Band Councils, and it shows you the role the government-funded Native Chiefs play. They are expected to throw half the people on reservation off their land. That's a requirement, that they are to disentitle half the people living on reservations from benefits and services. Where these people go, they're thrown off and they end up on the streets. Three-quarters of Native people live off reservation. Now they're living on the street in poverty, disease-ridden. Tuberculosis rampant among Natives living on the streets. A lot of the people I work with in Vancouver are in that state because they've been disentitled by their own chiefs from benefits. That's part of Agenda 21. They're getting the Native chiefs to help wipe out their own people and in return for benefits for them. And, you know, you see this all over the place.
It's amazing to me that the Indians on those reservations would not realize that they're being betrayed by their own leaders and rise up against them and fire them or whatever the equivalent is.
Well, they've tried. You give me an example of that. I mentioned Peter Yellowquill earlier, who works with our network in Manitoba. He's a traditional Ojibwe chief. He's never recognized the crown. He's never taken money from the government. The Native funded, or the government funded Native chiefs there on the Band Council have burned out his home. They've tried to kill him on a number of occasions. He went with another man, Louis Daniels, actually, the man who gave me my name, Eagle Strong Voice. They went, I was there one night in 2005. They went to the local Band Council and said, "You people were never even elected. You're self-appointed. You're illegitimate. Get off our territory." And, that same night, they were attacked by a goon squad that came out to their home for having challenged them like that. So it's pure terror. You know, they just terrorize their opponents, and they're backed up. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police back them up that way. The Mounties come out all the time, and they arrested Peter's son on trumped-up charges. They target any Indigenous person who isn't in the government system. And so that's what you face when you confront these thugs, right?
Amazing. And once again, I'll say, you know, it's the same everywhere. It's the same tactic that they use against anybody who speaks the truth. Okay, I wanted you, if you could, to clarify, you had brought up the Jesuits. A lot of people don't know what the Jesuits are and how are they connected to the Catholic Church. If you could mention that, please.
Yeah, they're a military society set up in the 1500s to counter the Reformation. Their whole purpose, and there's a secret Jesuit oath, which said that they have the right to kill any head of state who is not a Catholic. It's an oath, the special oath of loyalty to the Pope. So they were set up as a military and as an assassination group. Ignatius Loyola was a former soldier. He founded the order. The Jesuits went out all over the world, and their main purpose was to set up universities. For example, Georgetown University in Washington. Washington, D.C. was laid out by a Jesuit architect. A lot of the institutions of higher learning around the world were set up by the Jesuits to kind of brainwash people to stay loyal to the Catholic Church. And their target were free thinkers, liberals, humanists, Protestants, and Native people. Anybody who was not a Catholic was seen as an enemy of the faith. So, for example, the Jesuits set up the first boarding schools in America and Canada. Their aim was to brainwash those Indians who had survived to become Catholic loyalists. And in fact, the Jesuits would often go into villages and kill or drive away the traditional chiefs and put in Jesuit-trained Catholic chiefs to run the on the reservation. And that, in fact, is still in place. A lot of the chiefs running reservations in Canada now are church-going Catholics because of that tradition. So, you know, it's that old divide-and-conquer thing. But they were set up really as a terrorist organization to terrorize everybody back into the fold after the Reformation. And that's one of the reasons they've got a lot of power. The Jesuits own a lot of businesses in America. They've got over $1 billion in the U.S. economy. They own Citibank in America. There's a whole list of MasterCard. A number of these agencies are owned by with Jesuit money. And, you know, so, I mean, you got to kind of scratch the surface and see not only their history, but their whole corporate nature as well. And that's one of the reasons that they've been able to resist a lot of this investigation and litigation.
Yeah, and I'm just getting a message on Skype from Ravana. He writes, J-Suit, that they're claiming the title of God, J-Suit, is I am in French, and that the Jesuits have been kicked out of over 100 nations.
That's right, and you know, once you find the true nature of this organization, it, not only the Jesuits, but these churches that are responsible for any of these crimes really should not have the right to operate anymore in people's communities. And that's one of the reasons we put out those 10 measures that we're going to act on in September.
Yes, and which is so amazing that they claim to be doing this in the name of God. You know, yes, we can go in and murder anybody who doesn't agree with us. I mean, it's so sick on its face. I'm sure that's why a lot of Catholics have a hard time even wrapping their head around this.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because I know a number of Catholic priests across the country, and one of them in Quebec has actually taken his congregation and left. They say, yeah, we're going to be Catholics, but we're not going to be tied to Rome anymore. We're going to have our own congregation. We're not going to give money to this corrupt institution anymore. And people have the right to do that, you know, just act as a congregation. You don't need to be part of these big institutions. That was certainly never Jesus' plan. And, you know, I think the step Christians need to take.
Definitely. And what about Opus Dei? What is their connection to the Jesuits? Are they connected to the Jesuits? I thought that they were also another secret society within the Catholic Church.
They were. Now, these guys are all tied together, of course. It's like when I was in Rome the last time, I was speaking to a senator in the Rome legislature, because we had done a presentation to their Human Rights Committee about these crimes in the residential schools. And this man, he's a senior senator, he said, well, you know, the thing you have to understand is the mafia, the government, the Catholic Church, they're all the same people. And in the case of Opus Dei and the Knights of Columbus, these and the Knights of Malta, for example, if you just do a Google search on all the people who have been members of the Knights of Malta, it's every member of the U.S. establishment, the heads of the CIA, Nelson Mandela, all these politicians around the world, Bill Clinton, they're all Knights of Malta. And they're tied into Opus Dei as well. Opus Dei, which means the works of God, they were set up in the 1950s, and one of their main activities in South America was to fund military dictatorships to work to undermine anybody who was challenging the Catholic doctrine in any of these countries. They've got a lot of ties. The Pope who was actually exposing them, Pope John Paul I, he lasted only a month in office in 1978, then he was found dead. There's been a book written about that called In God's Name by David Yalop, where he shows that Opus Dei and these secret societies were involved in killing that pope because he was investigating their ties to the Vatican Bank and all of these dictatorships around the world. So, I mean, this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with murderers who are, you know, all part of the same boys' club.
Well, and when you're talking about them being involved with military dictatorships, it's not just a matter of them going against people who are leaving the Catholic Church. They're also involved in stealing all the natural resources of these countries.
Very much, yeah. In fact, you know, that's been really well documented. Just do any kind of Google search and you'll come up with a lot of that. But I think for American listeners, it's really important to know that the top elites in America, in the financial, in the political, the intelligence community, check them out. They're all members of the Knights of Malta. And this is, again, a secret society run directly by the Pope, and you know it's mind-boggling when you look at their list of members.
Yes, and then the Knights of Malti is tied to the Hospitallers. I'm not sure if mm-hmm. I'm pronouncing that correctly, but isn't that a subsect of people in the medical profession, the ones that are actually coming up with these plans for genocide and things of that nature?
Well, quite right. And as a matter of fact, the Templars and the Hospitallers were military societies in the Middle Ages. The Templars actually established the first bank because of their enormous wealth. That's one of the reasons the Pope wiped them all out when was that? I don't remember the exact date, but anyway, it was the 14th century. But when you trace what happened to a lot of these people and their organizations, yeah, over the years, they were very much involved in, for example, with the Rockefellers, when they were setting up the eugenics foundations in America, looking at sterilization, eugenics laws, population reduction, all of that. It's coming out of, these religious organizations. The first money for the Rockefeller Institute, the Eugenics Society, came out of the Catholic Church. And so there's another good book written about that called War Against the Weak by Edwin Black, where he looks at the origins of the eugenics movement in America, and that's where you can find it.
Which goes to show the hypocrisy of the church as they pretend that they're against abortion, but yet they're involved in genocide and eugenics. I mean, it's really sickening how that all works out.
Well, the Vatican has a lot of money invested in big pharma, Novartis, Eli Lilly, there's a direct tie between the Vatican Bank and the big pharmaceutical companies and the vaccine industry.
Wow.
In fact, Eli Lilly funds something called the Fund for Theological Education in America, which funds all the seminaries where priests and ministers are trained for the church. And one of the reasons the payback for them was that in a lot of these Indian boarding schools and orphanages, these priests and nuns were trying out vaccines experimentally on native kids going back a century. And that was their payoff to Big Pharma for all the money. So, I mean, you know, that's a tie we need to explore more, you know, the ties between Big Pharma and, which is the biggest lobby group in America, in the American government, Big Pharma and these churches.
Definitely, because my research has proven without any doubt that they're using vaccines now as a way to cause sterilization. They don't
right.
have to bring people in anymore and actually cut them open and tie their tubes or whatever. They give them injections of vaccines that have human chorionic gonadotropin in it, the hormone that women make when they first become pregnant. And if you inject it into a woman in childbearing years, she's going to develop antibodies against that. And anytime she gets pregnant, she's going to have a spontaneous miscarriage. So that's how they're doing it now.
Well, I've spoken to women, Inuit women from up north, who at a young age were given birth control pills when they were 9, 10 years old. They were put on a permanent diet of birth control pills and told it was vitamins. And so they couldn't lactate. They couldn't give birth, and when they did, they couldn't lactate because their bodies were so compromised by this. We know that on the West Coast in all the Indian hospitals, they were doing exactly that. They were giving sterilizing substances to women experimentally. We found some of the records of these Indian hospitals, but the government sealed it. As soon as we got on their trail, they sealed all the records in Ottawa, so it was hard to access. But still to this day, you know, when the swine flu gimmick came out a few years ago, they, under the Indian Act, no Indian on reservation can refuse medical treatment. So they went out to the Housed Indian Reservation here on Vancouver Island, and they were forcing the Tamiflu drug on the whole population in a Housed. Half of them came down with swine flu. After that. And so, you know, they were definitely using natives as guinea pigs just a few years ago with the swine flu nonsense. So, I mean, it's an example of how it goes on.
They actually wrote in the Indian Act that no Indian can refuse medical treatment?
That's right. It's Section 76. It's still in place. And it says you can't refuse medical treatment or hospitalization if they deem it in your best interest. So, you know...
That's mind-boggling, and I also was not aware that they actually had Indian hospitals, because you know that those must be houses of death where experimentation and all kinds of things are going on. Don't the Indians realize this? I mean, what happens to you if you refuse? Do they just murder you? I mean, what's the penalty for refusal of quote-unquote treatment?
Well, I'll give you a very specific example. William Coombs, who died in the hospital, he was ordered. Now, he's a man, he was a friend of mine in Vancouver. He had been incarcerated in the Catholic residential school in Kamloops. He saw Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip abduct those 10 children. He spoke about it on my radio program, and he was ordered. The next month, he suddenly was ordered to report to the Native Health Society, a government-funded group in downtown part of Vancouver. When he went down there to find out what it was about, the ambulance and the police were waiting for him. They took him forcibly down to St. Paul's Hospital, a Catholic hospital in Vancouver. This was just in February, 2 years ago. And he was given injections. His partner was there watching it happen. They gave him an injection. He went into a coma, and they put him on life support, and then less than 48 hours, they pulled him off. They just killed him. They pulled him off life support. Now, he had to do that under the law, under the Indian Act. He couldn't refuse medical treatment, and he wasn't even living on a reservation. He was just receiving, treatment for alcoholism, which he actually had under control. He was improving. But they used that as a pretext to just kill him through the hospital. And that's how it works. As a Native person, you're under that continual coercion and control. So that's how easy it is. And the Indian hospitals were set up that way. About a half a mile from where I'm sitting was the Nanaimo Indian Hospital. They were sterilizing Native women here. They were testing out all sorts of things on them. Some of them were held. I've spoken to women who were held in the hospital for over 15 years and used in all sorts of grisly experiments. There's a big grave, mass grave site just behind the school. It's on military land, and so it's hard to get in there, you know, Department of National Defense land. It's monitored all the time. So that's what we're facing.
I still can't comprehend that they could make a law that you must accept treatment. Is that because they get some kind of benefits as Indians? You said he wasn't living on the reservation, but did they get, you know, some kind of compensation because of everything that's been done to the Indians? I know the Indian Trust Fund here in the States was stolen by Congress long ago. They claim they don't know what happened to the money, which is mind-boggling in itself. But is that because they get benefits? How can they say you cannot refuse treatment? I mean, the Indians' history is that they used natural medicine. They had their own way, using herbs and things in order to treat different conditions that would come up.
Well, so you know, it comes out of a simple law. It's called the Indian Act, and right in the preamble of the Indian Act, it says no other law shall supersede this one. Any law that does is considered null and void, and that includes the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So the Indian Act is a law unto itself, and it's anything that's in there takes precedence over everything else, and it says that, you know, it's a paternalistic attitude that government knows what's best for Indians, and when they want to give them treatment, they can't refuse it, and it's that simple. And in return, yeah, traditionally the Indians got some benefits, like when they were living on reservation, they didn't have to pay taxes. That's not the case anymore. They've withdrawn that. And, under the original treaties, every Native in Canada was supposed to receive a quarter section of land. That's 160 acres of land. Nobody ever got that land. It was just a false promise. So, I mean, it's the kind of thing you face, right?
It's just amazing. I mean, it's so important that you've done this work, and I know how busy you are, but I think if you could write some kind of a book tying all these things together, it would be very critical. Because, as I said, the same thing, it's like their master template. They're doing the same thing to everybody now, but obviously, you know, they started with the indigenous peoples, and I know in Australia they're going after the Aborigines. Pretty much the same deal. They want to get rid of the ancient wisdom. That's very obvious because these people knew how to live off the grid. They knew how to take care of themselves. So in their best interest, allegedly, like you said, you know, the governments know how to take care of them better than they do. They're destroying that ancient wisdom so that the others cannot learn from them.
Right. Well, it's not only the ancient wisdom, but it's the ancient jurisdiction they had. The jurisdiction of the land itself gave them traditional authority, and the occupying powers knew that. The only way they could get around that is to create a dependent class of Native puppets to enforce the false jurisdiction of the Crown authority on the Native people, and that's still what's going on. But, you know, you mentioned the books. There are two books actually in existence about all this. I just wanted to mention that to listeners. Hidden No Longer, Yeah, Hidden No Longer, Genocide in Canada, Past and Present. That's a book with all of my research and tying together historically a lot of the threads of this genocide and where it comes from. You can read it online. It's hiddennolonger.com. You can download it offline. We've actually had 25,000 downloads of the book. And the other book is kind of my personal biography about this. It's called Unrepentant, Disrobing the Emperor. And you can get it online at Amazon Books. And so those two books really cover a lot of this, along with our documentary film Unrepentant, which again is on that website, hiddennolonger.com. We're working on another documentary now, kind of a sequel to it, about a lot of these things. So, you know, again, you can follow that, hiddennolonger.com, and then the updates at itccs.org.
Excellent. Okay, I'm also reading statements made by our board op as well as Ravana on Skype. And one thing that Ravana had brought up is this term, the Holy See. And I've always wondered, where did that come from and what does that mean? Any ideas on that?
Yeah, I just read the other day what that meant. It slips my mind right now, but what I recall is that it's, again, a legal term. This stuff, in a nutshell, it all comes from Roman emperors. Every term used in the Catholic Church is not a Christian term at all. It's a Roman term. It wasn't the Emperor Constantine, but one of his predecessors, the Roman Emperor Aurelian, in the year 273, created a thing called Dominus et Deus, which means Master and God. And it basically created the position of Pope, Emperor slash Pope, as the authority over all of heaven and earth. In other words, it supplanted God. It made one person the ruler of all society. And all the terms used by the Pope come from that notion that he has authority over everybody. And so, you know, I mean, if I went around claiming that, they'd lock me up. But he can claim this and get away with it. And again, it comes from an old Roman idea. So the thing to remember now, we're not talking about Christianity. We're talking about a state religion set up under the emperors. This Aurelian set up a new cult of monotheism, the sun worship, which became Christ, the Son of God. And again, that it appropriated Christian language, but it was a, if you like, a pagan religion posing as Christianity. And that's still what's in place today. So I'll check that out. You can find a lot of this stuff actually doing any search online. But yeah, that's some of the stuff I'm going to be talking about in this new documentary.
Which new documentary is that you're talking about?
Well, we're going to call it Unrelenting. It's the sequel to Unrepentant, and it's going to be talking about what's happened in the last 5 years. Has more of this evidence has come out, forcing the government to, you know, issue their bogus apology, but the uncovery of these graves, more of the recent evidence, and also how this is now spanning the world and involving a direct indictment of the Vatican themselves.
Excellent. And when do you think that will be coming out? Any ideas?
Well, over the next year, we're working on it. You know, again, it's a work in progress.
Okay, excellent. Well, I'd ask you to come back on when you have that to announce, because this is so important. And actually, we have Alex Hunter on the line. He has a question or a comment. Are you there, Alex?
Yes, I am.
Okay, hi, Alex.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. And it's an excellent show. I've been actually getting some feedback from it. People are tuning in that I never thought would, and they're saying it's an excellent resource. And I said yes, and I'm really elated to hear that you actually tuned in. This one guy ran for mayor in Victoria. It was good. It's like it's getting, it seems that people recognize we're being censored, and that in order to try and prove that we aren't, they're letting us through in more places than they ever did.
Right. Well, that's a good thing. And let me just say that I want to just keep bringing this point home, that people must care about what's happening to the Native peoples, because they're doing it to everybody now. So anybody that thinks that, you know, they are the other, they are not the other. They are human beings. They have a conscience, as opposed to the psychopathic predators that are doing all these things. And those are the enemy. Those are the people that I try to shine a light on every week, and those are the ones that have to be stopped from doing what they're doing. They have created this hell on earth, and there are solutions to everything that's being done. And so once those people are no longer in charge, it's going to be amazing the kind of world that we actually have.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Now, this is a really powerful show, so I don't want to cut in too much here. I'll be really quick. I just wanted to promote the meeting in Vancouver with Kevin at Robin Gwynn's Cafe downtown. So I guess, Kevin, you'll probably say something about that anyway.
Yeah, I can announce that, Alex. Thanks for mentioning that.
Excellent. I'll just get out of the way. I wanted to bring it to your attention that Brian Clare is trying to contact you. He's on Skype, and I'm going to try and guide him to Pat.
Okay.
And he wanted to talk to you. He's in UK, I think. And Dr. Carley should know who he is. So I'll get out of the way, and you guys continue. It's an excellent show.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, guys.
I'll just mention what he was referring to. On June 14th, Thursday, June 14th in Vancouver, we're holding a public meeting to talk about a lot of this stuff and the need to have a new political arrangement in Canada where we have a republic free of the authority of the crown so we can put these criminals on trial in common law courts. So that's going to be Thursday, June 14th, 7 p.m. at Mobius Coffee, which is 4125 Main Street. And again, if you want more info on that, it's hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com.
Okay. And what about any other speaking engagements that you have scheduled? I know that you travel all over the world trying to educate people as to what's going on. Any itinerary that you can mention on the show?
Yeah, I'm actually in the fall. I'll be going through Canada and the United States. I've got invites to start in the West Coast and work my way east. So all throughout the fall, that'll be happening. Really, it's just a question if people would like to book me in to contact me. We can arrange venues. I am completely community supported, so I'm funded from the people who invite me. I am dependent on that in order to get around. And I'm also going over to Europe in the fall as well. To be part of this movement on September 15th, where we're going to be starting a direct civil disobedience campaign. It's including working with Occupy the Vatican and other groups. So it'll be, you know, over the next fall and spring as well, I'll be on the road a lot. So if you want to, again, contact me. It's hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com.
Excellent. And, yes, in terms of if they do not give a response to your questions, your very hard questions, by the 15th, what other things are planned besides the Occupy the Vatican and Occupy the Catholic Churches type activities? What other things are you going to be doing? Because this is where the rubber really hits the road. We know they're not going to respond. We know they're going to continue to hide under
right.
the laws they've made to protect themselves. So how do you see this all playing out?
Well, we've just worked with a lot of groups, survivors now, that are coming forward to say, we're simply not going to let the church operate then if that's the case. We're going to disrupt their services. We're going to occupy their offices. We're going to get the indigenous chiefs to order them off their land. We're going to make it very difficult for them. And when you see how easy it is to make that happen, without any of that happening, with just the exposure of their crimes, the Vatican is falling apart. Now imagine if enough people organized began disrupting their services. One guy in Dublin forced the Archbishop to meet with the survivors group simply by chaining himself to the altar in the main cathedral. The church is really susceptible to that kind of public embarrassment and exposure. So if people consistently start doing those actions, you're going to see a lot of change happening. They're going to run for the hills. And so we're convinced that that's what we've got to start doing now, starting in September. And we're getting a lot of support from that. We had, on that one article we had on our site, we had 57,000 hits when we normally get a few thousand. So it shows you the level of interest in this from all over the world now.
Yes, and why stop with ordering the churches off the native lands? They should be ordered out of any towns or communities if they don't address
yes.
these issues. I mean, this as having a very big domino effect.
Absolutely it should. We don't want to confine it all to the native. They're kind of the thin edge of the wedge. They've done it so far, but we want people in every community to realize that they call it in American law the necessity defense. When you have the right under common law, when the courts and the police are not protecting your children, to take action against the people harming children. And so we have the right to order these people out of our communities. And, you know, in one famous case in Saskatchewan, Native people went in and physically chased the priest out of the church, and he never came back. You know, they've talked about defrocking these known child-raping priests, stripping them of the robes and throwing them out of the church. I mean, I think that's what people need to do if they're worried about the long-term safety of their own children. So this is all the kinds of stuff we're going to be encouraging. And on top of all of that, we're going to be reconvening the tribunal itself, where we're going to be holding hearings in countries all over the world where people can come forward, name the names, and you know, indictments and sentences can be brought against these churches so that the community is rallied on a bigger scale, you know, not just the individual actions, but we get a lot of the community aware of involved in these things. So these are some of the things we're going to be planning and doing.
Yes, and I would hope that there would be a massive outpouring of support from the communities as well. They should be coming to listen to the evidence being presented, because once enough people know about this, the party's over for these monsters.
That's right, and as you know from your own work, it's not so much what we do, but how persistent we are in what we do. You know, if we do this once and then walk away, it's not going to have any effect. We have to stay at this year after year, because they're not going to stop, and we can't either.
Exactly. Okay, I'm getting a message that Ravana has another question. Go ahead, Ravana.
Oh, I just wanted to ask if you had any further information. You mentioned that the Native women that were disappearing, and I know there was a case of the serial killer on the farm, and the RCMP was basically delivering women to him.
Yeah.
And also, I was going to mention that there was just an article that came out about the a priest who had been removed from the priesthood for molesting children. And they found out that he now works for the TSA. And then also the case in Philadelphia. I've heard just a little bit of information about that, but there's, I guess, a big case going on with child molestation and whatnot with the diocese in, I'm pretty sure it was Philadelphia.
That's right. There's trials right now in Philadelphia and Kansas City where American bishops are actually standing trial for having protected child rapists in the church. And again, as I mentioned earlier, they're saying they were simply following orders of this Cardinal Bevilacqua in New York, who's now dead. Anyway, the first issue you mentioned about the missing women, the government again has done their cover-up. When you get enough of this evidence coming up, they step in to control the information, and they've got an official inquiry into the missing women. But the point is, this inquiry, like the TRC, is ignoring a lot of the evidence on the ground. For example, we've had a number of eyewitnesses say they saw police take Native women out to this Picton farm. The Picton brothers ran this farm where basically they were making snuff films. They were raping and murdering film women on film. The police were involved in it. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police, definitely there were elements involved in doing that. And we even know that the remains of these women were taken out to a number of Indian reservations. And we even had a man dig up some of these remains and have them analyzed, and it proved that they were women, young women whose remains were mixed up with that of pigs. And all of this evidence, none of it's being quoted in the official inquiry. It's all being suppressed. And, you know, there's still people disappearing as we speak because of this. And so, I think it's part of a much bigger iceberg here, the tip we're looking at here. And it involves, the fact that it's open warfare on any indigenous person, anyone with traditional knowledge, anyone who's still claiming their language and their land. These tend to be the people targeted all the time.
And since when does "I was just following orders" make you immune from prosecution? That is ridiculous.
Well,
go ahead.
Under international law, that's no defense. That you were following an order. And as a matter of fact, it's already been said that a head of state can be put on trial for crimes against humanity. So again, you know, we have every legal argument to put the Pope and the Queen and others on trial.
Exactly. Okay, go ahead, Ravana. He has some other comments. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, there's, you know, it's all good to charge him for genocide, which is what they're doing. But, you know, there's this guy, Rod Class, phenomenal researcher, and he's exposing the United States bankruptcy and how that all relates back to the Vatican and the Sesquique Trust and everything else. And the entire system is so criminal that the more parts of it that we expose, the less places they have to hide, is what it comes down to.
Yep. Yeah, that's it.
That's why Let me just say, I would use the term crimes against humanity, because it's much more than just genocide. It's everything that they're doing. And I'm so glad to learn from you, Kevin, about their affiliation with Big Pharma. That's something I was not aware of. So, you know, they're all tied together.
Well, it's not even just crimes against humanity. It's conspiracy. It's conspiracy to commit genocide. It's slavery. Yeah. It's piracy. It's murder. I mean, everything. I mean, it's hard to use a catch-all term because people don't really understand what all you're talking about when you do that. You know, you say genocide and they're like, oh, okay, all right, you know, they have some idea of what that is. But when you actually start labeling what the crimes are involved, I think that's what really is going to get people to wake up to it. That's just my opinion on it.
Yeah, and people have a lot of power on the ground. You know, we often find the church got most upset when we were handing out flyers to churchgoers saying, don't put money in the collection plate. You know, that's what really worries them. And, you know, like, why the hell should they be tax exempt? Why should taxpayers foot the bill for these churches when they're responsible for so many crimes?
Exactly. And you know, that they have all these beautiful churches and they don't pay taxes on the real estate and all of these different things. I mean, people have to start asking all these questions. And, yes, hit them where it hurts, which is in the pocketbook. Definitely, that's one of the very important parts of the plan, because to keep this scam going, they have to continue to, you know, reap. I can't even imagine how much money the Catholic Church takes in every year. Do you have any idea of that?
Well, I mean, it was cited that just from the collection plates alone, we're talking over $50 to $100 billion a year.
Wow.
And then all their investments and everything. Of course, it's in the trillions. You know, so, yeah, I would say the richest corporation on the planet.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you have to understand the Vatican Bank, they handle 95% of the drug money on the planet goes through the Vatican Bank, because once it hits the Vatican Bank, there's no way to trace it past there.
Right.
So then you can put it anywhere else. You know, that's the P2, propaganda do. That was one of the things that they did, was dealing with Michelle the Shark Sindona, and they dealt with BCCI, the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, which is all the heroin money out of Afghanistan from when the Russians were in there.
Hmm.
Because we were giving the Mujahideen Stinger missiles, but they didn't have any way to pay for them, because they're paying for them with heroin.
Right.
I mean, you know, and the Vatican is always there. They're always got their finger in whatever evil is going on. They are standing there either looking over it and profiting from it, or looking over it to make sure someone else doesn't get wind of it, or, you know, doesn't harm the operation. You know,
that's right.
As long as they're getting their cut, they're okay with it.
Yeah.
And what about P2? Ravana had mentioned P2. I thought that was like the arm of the Catholic Church that admits that they're Masons. Is that true, or am I misinformed?
Well, okay, there's the Open Hand Society, and then there's the P2 is actually the Masonic Lodge in Italy, in Rome, that was passed by the CIA and the intelligence agencies with finding out what was the prophecy of Fatima, what was the actual true third secret. And then also they were used to assassinate the Pope, place a Masonic agent in as Pope, all these different other things, get certain laws passed in the Vatican. I mean, they literally did everything that they could to weasel their way into the position so that they could do what needed to be done. And, you know, the Vatican is doing the same thing to the CIA as the CIA is doing to the Vatican. You know, once you start dealing with the intelligence agencies, it starts really getting complicated. But that's what propaganda do was. They were the Masonic Lodge that was tasked with finding out the secret of Fatima.
Well, which is amazing because the early popes I know had spoken out about Masons. And in fact, supposedly anybody who was a member of the Freemasons was not allowed to be a Catholic. So, you know, that's just another example of what hypocrites they are, because in fact they have their own Masonic lodge. Do you know anything about that, Kevin?
And not only that, when the Pope that only was in office for a month, the next Pope, he was the one, if I remember correctly, that passed the papal bull that said it's no longer forbidden to be a Mason.
I think that's John Paul II from Poland. I think that's why they turned into a saint recently, because he also, his first act was to cancel the investigation of the Vatican Bank and restore all of those guys to their positions. And his payoff, part of his payoff was the Vatican started funding the opposition movement in Poland, the Solidarity Trade Union movement. And that's where, interestingly, Ronald Reagan recognized the Vatican diplomatically. The U.S. government hadn't done that until Reagan's time, and that was part of the deal. They were funding the Solidarity movement, you know, to undermine the Polish regime, and that was the price of John Paul II, of him being brought in. So that's all in David Yelup's book. It's really a good book, In God's Name.
Well, all I can say is I wish that all Catholics could hear this show, because I can just imagine the effect that that would have. So I encourage any listeners listening, if you know anybody that's a Catholic, the archive of this show will be up by tonight on thelightofdayradioshow.com. Please have them listen. And it's very, very painful. I experienced this myself, you know, wanting all my life to become a medical doctor. And then once I finally did, having to face the fact that my profession was actually creating all disease and killing people. It's a very difficult thing to do, to face the evil within whatever you know, have been proud to be a part of. But we have to do it, because from what Kevin's telling us on this most excellent show, it's just amazing how the web is spread everywhere.
Yeah, and I often say to people, you know, we can all have our own beliefs, but there has to be three things that unite us: the defense of Mother Earth, the defense of our children, and the defense of our inherent liberties. And if people can unite around that, it doesn't matter what they call themselves. When the institutions running the planet are genocidal and murderous and criminal, then obviously you don't have anything to do with them anymore. And that's what's beginning to make sense to people more and more, that I find.
Yeah, and the fact that they do these things under the name of God is so evil. It's just amazing to me that they continue to get away with this. You know, the Pope is supposed to be the human form. You know, he's taking the place of Christ on the earth.
Exactly.
I'm sure it's just amazing. You know, if only Christ could give us his opinion of what this church is up to.
Well, I think he'd do more than give his opinion. He'd probably try to smash up the money changers again, and he'd probably get crucified again. But as I say, you can't keep a good man down, so.
Exactly. Okay, we're almost out of time, but Ravana had mentioned something about Lech Walesa. Did you want to say something about Lech Walesa?
Oh, yeah, he was the guy who was the head of the Solidarity movement. He was like the public voice of it, I guess you'd say. And he was given the Nobel Prize, and then he actually gave the money away, or gave the money back. He didn't accept it, because he said he wasn't in it for the money, and that's not why he was doing it. And then, you know, I mean, you get like $100,000 or $150,000 or whatever, and he's just like, no, that's not why I'm doing it. And yeah, I think he gave it to charity. I don't remember exactly, but yeah, that was the.
Was he a Catholic?
I don't remember.
He was actually, there's a famous picture of him in front of in front of the Pope. People can be good individually and not know what they're part of. I mean, I often say this to people in the Occupy movement, like, you know, what's really funding this? And I mean, I'm not totally sure myself, but in organizations like in Poland, they were getting tons of money through the CIA and the Vatican, and a lot of these trade unionists didn't even know the fact, right, how they were being manipulated. So I think you can make a distinguish between a person's personal integrity, and yet they're part of something that they're not even aware how the strings are being pulled. So I encounter that all the time with people, right? You got to just say, well, know what you're really part of at all times. Know who's behind it all. What is the actual agenda? Don't be manipulated.
Exactly. Okay, we're basically out of time, but Alex wanted to make one more quick comment. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, thanks. This is the best show we've had without as much censorship, and I think it's because they're trying to show they're not censoring us because it's starting to get to become very obvious. So excellent show. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, and thank you so much, Kevin, and definitely keep in touch. And like I said, when your new documentary is done, I want to have you back on again to spread the word about that. What you're doing needs to be done all over the world in all areas of what's happening to all of us. And it's going to be amazing how that works out. So thank you very much, everybody that participated, and especially you, Kevin. Okay,
thank
bye-bye.
You